Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hey everyone, Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It's really great to have you company for this episode of the show. Now, before we get into the episode itself, I do have a bit of news, or kind of pre-news, I guess, and that is over the last 6, 9, maybe even 12 months, we've been working on a couple of really big projects which are nearly complete, and I can't wait to share them with you because with these projects, I really believe that they're going to add tremendous value to your practice. And so over the next few weeks, I want to share with you here on the podcast and on the Savvy Dentist magazine a few things that we've been working on for quite some time now that we think is going to add a lot of value to your business, okay? We think that it's going to add a lot of income for you, it's going to add a lot of professional satisfaction for you, it's going to free up some time for you, all those sorts of things, and I can't wait to share that with you. Now, that brings me to today's conversation, which is also about business value. And I think it's really important to understand that as we go about growing our practice, we want to build your practice the right way. We want to make sure that we're building your practice in such a way that it is valuable at the time you want to stop having the practice, right? Now, what's really interesting around that, some of you might be saying, well, that's like light years away from me, Jesse. That's, you know, decades away. And I want to talk to you about this concept of building to sell. And the interesting thing about this notion is when you build a business so that it could be sold, it doesn't mean that you have to sell it. Because the key thing to understand is if you build it right and that business is easy to sell, then that business is also fun to run because it's giving you the income that you want, it's giving you the free time that you want, it's giving you the freedom that you want. And it's generally more fun because it's quite rewarding. So when we talk about building to sell, it doesn't mean you have to sell. It's about making sure that you're building an asset that has tangible value in the marketplace. And so in this conversation today, I want to talk a little bit about what value is, how it's calculated, the things that influence value. And to start the conversation, I want to have a conversation about cows. And you might be thinking, oh my goodness me, Jesse, what's that got to do with anything? Well, as it turns out, quite a bit, because I was at boarding school when I was a young kid, and I was raised in Brisbane, born in Sydney, raised in Brisbane, and my dad got a job in New Guinea when I was about 10, and it was the big break for the family, and it was the big white hope for our future. And so it was terrific, and we all moved to New Guinea. My sister went immediately to boarding school in Brisbane, and I went to school for a year in Port Moresby, and then after that year, went to boarding school. And by the time I got to boarding school back in Brisbane, I was 11 years old. And so I was in a dormitory full of, you know, 15 or 16 other kids, all boys, and it was terrific. I had the best time ever at boarding school. I'm really grateful to have had that experience because I'm still friends with, you know, many of those guys today. That's interesting, but what's that got to do with business value? Well, when I was at boarding school, some of the kids there were from all different walks of life, and coming from all different walks of life, you got to see life through different eyes or different perspectives. And obviously, we all went to boarding school with our parents' views on life and different perspectives from our parents. But I began to realize very quickly that the way I was raised and the perspectives that my parents had was just one way of looking at the world. And there were many other ways equally valid to look at life. And I particularly liked talking to the kids from the country. So we had kids from sugarcane farms, cattle farms, dairy farms, cotton farms, and a whole variety of different other things as well. But one of my mates was a dairy farmer, and I got to learn a bit about the process of dairy farming. Now, I'm no expert in dairy farming, let me just say that out loud, but it struck me that building a business is a bit like having a dairy farm in some respects, right? So if you think about this, with your cows, your dairy cows, you want to be able to milk those cows every single day. You want to be able to know predictably, you know, how much milk you're going to get from each cow over its lifetime. So you want to be able to know from your business how much cash flow you're going to be able to, you know, take from your business. You want to have reliable streams of cash flow, just like you want to have reliable streams of milk from the cow. And equally, you want to be able to take that cash flow and convert that into wealth outside of your business. So converting your business profits into personal wealth, whether it be, you know, investing in property or stocks or whatever it is you choose to do, right? You want to be able to take that surplus cash flow and turn it into wealth outside of the business so it produces more income again. Now, again, if you're a farmer, typically most dairy farmers would sell their milk to a processor, but the processor then turns that milk into yogurt, cheese, or whatever else, right? And so the milk is converted into other things. But what's really interesting as well is if you look after your cows well, once they get to the end of their milk producing life, they're still very valuable because they can be sold for beef, right? Or if the farmer wants to sell his farm altogether, then the herd still has tremendous value. And I think this is really interesting as well because from a business point of view, you want to always be building your asset, your business in a way that has value at the end of the time you want it. Now, you might be early in your stages of practice ownership and you might be thinking, Jesse, hang on, I'm going to tune out. So please don't tune out. This is really valuable no matter where you are in the life cycle of your practice ownership journey. Because what I'm talking about is building an asset to sell doesn't mean you have to sell it. What I'm talking about is building an asset to sell means you're building a business that has tangible value in the marketplace. Now, every company that can be sold easily, every practice that can be sold easily is also a great practice or a great company to own because it gives you the income you're seeking. It gives you that surplus cash flow that allows you to live your life well and invest for the future. But it also gives you time freedom, time flexibility. And by doing those couple of things really well and setting your practice up the right way, then your business has tremendous value. And what that means is if you get this right, over the course of your lifetime, you're going to create enormous wealth from your practice and you're not going to need to rely on the sale of your practice for your future well-being. Unfortunately, these days, lots of practice owners do rely on the sale of their practice to fund their retirement, but that's another story. We don't want you in that category. We want you to have made your money on the journey. But we know that it's the cherry on top of the icing on top of the cake, right? You get to have a good exit. So in this particular conversation, I want to really discuss what value is, how it's calculated, or the different methods, and of course, talk about the things that enhance value and the things that detract from value. So that's really the purpose of this conversation. So let's start by talking about what value actually is. And you think that's a really simple concept. But when I was going through some study some years ago, I studied business at university, and I just for transparency and completeness, I did not finish those studies. And the reason why is while I learned some great skills, it was incredibly academic and it was designed to help employees kind of learn about business rather than entrepreneurs and business owners learn about business. For all the complexity in the textbooks, it was actually quite hard to find a good definition of value. So I'm going to give you, my definition of value, but there'll be others that are perhaps more formal. My definition of value is what someone in an open marketplace is prepared to pay for your business, right? Based on their own assessment, based on all the opportunity and all the risk that they can see and is open and available, that's what I deem to be true value. Now, that's a fairly, common sense approach to business valuation. But if you read the textbooks, then you're going to get all manner of complexity. There's different ways of calculating business value. And when I was studying business at uni, we went through a whole variety of different calculations. There's the income-based approach, there's the asset-based approach, market-based approach, all this sort of stuff, right? And in dental practice, most dental practices are valued using an income-based approach, which is looking at the earnings of the business and figuring out from those earnings what the business is actually worth. Now, when it comes to income approach valuation methods, there's kind of two primary ones that we talk about. The first one is called discounted cash flow. And what happens is you project out the future income of the practice. So you've got to be able to forecast that income, understanding things like patient flow capacity, marketing, retention, all those sorts of things. Forecast out that income and then using a discounting method, discounting that back to today's money to create what we call the net present value of the asset. Right now, that's a fairly complicated method, but I'll come back to that in a second. The other way is known as the capitalization method, where you take the repeatable sustainable earnings of a business and you times that by multiple, right? And that multiple is influenced primarily by two key factors. The first one is the growth opportunities of the practice, and the second one is the risk associated with the practice. Now, what the capitalization method and the discounted cash flow method have in common, in spite of the very different calculations, is they both rely on having stable, predictable income, right? Repeatable, sustainable income is highly valuable in a business. And anything you can do to increase that, obviously drive your revenue, reduce your expenses, et cetera, is going to be, a great value enhancer, right? But what influences the multiple in the capitalization rate or the discount rate in the discounted cash flow method are both the growth of the practice, the projected growth or the growth opportunity, as well as the risk, right? So when we're thinking about things that drive business value, it really kind of falls into what do we need to do to create reliable, sustainable, predictable cash flow, the stuff you can bank on day in, day out, week in, week out, month in, month out, year in, year out, as well as where does the growth live and where does the risk live. So that then leads me into thinking about, as you build your business, how do you focus on those things that create value and make sure you're identifying those value detractors. So let's talk about the first value detractor, and that is inconsistent revenue. Okay, inconsistent income is where you're having your, you know, really good months, really, you know, poor months, really good months, really poor months, and you're kind of on this yo-yo rollercoaster ride of revenue generation. Now, this is really, really poor because what it shows is you don't know how to make money. You don't have a reliable engine to create money. Now, one of the things that we talk about in the work that we do is you've got to have four key financial systems, but one of them in particular is this revenue generation model, right? You've got to have a reliable way of generating revenue. You've got to be able to forecast what you need your revenue to be. So looking, you know, ahead 12 months, usually it's an annual forecast, and you've got to be able to look ahead, project out where your income is coming from, and also know where your expenses are going to land as well. And that gives you the ability to kind of anticipate where your income is going to be. But attached to that is you need a revenue machine. And that comes back to having really strong marketing processes, having really solid sales processes or case acceptance processes within the practice, I should say, so that you are able to take your patient flow and reliably and consistently turn that into cash flow. That's the genesis of it. So having systems around marketing, having systems around sales, having systems around delivery is really, really key to making sure you can produce that revenue consistently and stably over time. Okay. And you want to have stability of earnings growth. So you want to see that growing, but you want to see it in a nice, stable, predictable way and forecast that out so that you can demonstrate that I forecast I was going to do A, B, and C, and I actually did do A, B, and C. And if you've got that historical tracking there, then it gives confidence to a prospective buyer that your business can do what it says it can do, right? So that's the first key thing, is understanding that revenue. And of course, when you're getting ready to, you know, sell your practice, you're going to really kind of try and ramp it up. But even, you know, and cut your expenses down and all that sort of stuff, you know, typically some of us will run a few expenses through our business, you know, cars and so on. And when you're getting ready to sell that, you probably want to try and strip some of those things out or have that normalized by your accountant so that the prospective purchaser can see what the true income is. Okay, so that's really, really key. The second key things we spoke about were growth opportunities. So again, let's talk about growth opportunities. We need to make sure that we do have, as I said a moment ago, really reliable marketing systems. What that means is we need to have reliable systems for recruiting new patients. We're going to be able to demonstrate our ability to reliably attract a certain number of patients month in, month out, new patients every month. But we also want to be able to demonstrate our net growth of our patient base. So it's no good, you know, attracting new patients if we are not keeping them. So we've got to have really good patient retention systems in there as well. And of course, we need to have our reactivation systems in there. And in addition to those marketing systems, we also need a strong capacity plan. So what drives growth is having capacity. So that means we've got to make sure we have enough physical assets. So have we got enough chair space, et cetera? If we don't have enough chair space, how can we get more from our existing infrastructure? Maybe we're going to split shifts or do whatever. Maybe we can open up another room, whatever the situation is for you. But we want to be able to demonstrate growth potential there for the prospective purchaser. And there's got to be some upside to attract a higher level of multiple or a higher price at the end of it. A third factor, of course, is risk. Now, this is where I really want to kind of spend a bit of time hanging out in this conversation today. When it comes to risk, there's a couple of key things you want to be able to do in your practice. And this is good business whether you're selling or not, okay? You want to be able to firstly identify risk, you know, find it, identify it. You want to be able to quantify that risk, and then you want to be able to mitigate that risk. And so the question you want to be able to ask yourself is, you know, when I'm making a decision, what's the upside of this decision? What's the downside of this decision? Can I live with that downside? And then can I mitigate the downside? Again, really, really important. So when it comes to risks, there's a couple of key risks. I'm not going to get into all of them. There's ones, you know, broadly, there's two categories of risk. Ones that you can control, ones that you can't control. So let's just kind of talk about the ones you can't control for the moment. We can't control whether there's a pandemic, for example. okay? We can't control interest rates. We can't control some of the major world events that are impacting inflationary costs, et cetera, all that sort of stuff we can't control. What we can control are the things that, you know, we put aside in terms of have we got enough, you know, rainy day cash accounts to allow for contingencies of pandemics and the like. But just getting more specifically into the risks that we can control, one of the first risks that we need to be aware of is concentration risks. Now, in other businesses, not so much in dental practice, but although there is an application I'm going to talk about in a second, but in other businesses, sometimes you'll see a business generate, you know, 60, 70, even 80% of their revenue from one or two key customers. And you can appreciate that if they were to lose one or two of those relationships, then that whole business falls over. And you might think that doesn't sound right. Well, let me tell you a quick story about when I was running my marketing agency. I came to Canberra. I was living in Brisbane at the time. I came to Canberra to do some work for a law firm. And this particular law firm had a $1 million contract with one of the local councils. Now, what was interesting is in the law firm, there was one key person responsible for the relationship. And in the council, there was also one key person responsible for the relationship. So what that meant is if either of those people moved on, for whatever reason, the relationship between the law firm and the local council was broken. And so the very first thing we did was to have more of the law firm's people get to know more of the council people. So instead of having one strand of relationship, this one single thread, we had multiple threads of relationship. And when you bind those together, it forms a rope, which is much stronger than a single strand, right? So concentration risk is a real thing. Now, you might go, well, hang on, Jesse, I've got a database of 3,000, 5,000, 10,000 people, whatever it is, right? Now, here's where I think this is applicable in dentistry. And I'm going to be, you know, going out on a limb here because there'll be a lot of people that disagree with me about this. But I think preferred provider relationships represent a source of concentration risk. If you're getting all of your patients from one source, you are leaving yourself vulnerable to the whims, the fancies, the decisions of an external party. That means they can either change their rebate structure, they can take you off network, they can do all those sorts of things. So if you happen to be a preferred provider for any of the health funds, I think it's very, very incumbent upon you to diversify your source of patients. You need to get good at marketing. I'm not saying don't have a preferred provider relationship if you think that serves you, but you've got to be very careful that you don't rely too heavily on that relationship for patient flow. Very, very important. So that means you've got to go back to what we spoke about earlier and build out your marketing systems. You cannot outsource your marketing to the health funds. And if you do that, that is risk in my view. And to me, if you're relying on other people to send you patients, then you are less valuable as a business than someone who has a marketing system that reliably produces patient flow on their own, right? So that's something to be mindful of. Now, the other thing that we need to be thinking about is making sure we have key person risk under control. Now, typically, in a dental practice, there's two obvious places for key person risk. One is with you as the principal. Now, typically, if you are generating the lion's share of the revenue, you are self-employed. You're probably time poor because you're busy doing dentistry and drilling, filling, and billing and trying to run a business outside of that. And you don't have enough leverage there. So there's a lot of risk around that. So when you do go to sell your practice, and if anyone's ever been through the process of selling to a corporate or anyone else, they're looking very carefully at what percentage of the revenue does the principal generate. Now, in all honesty, the least amount or the less percentage of revenue that you generate as a portion of the whole pie, the better. Now, obviously, we want that pie, that total revenue, to be strong and expanding, but we don't want that to be strong and expanding because you're working harder and harder and harder. So again, going back to a comment I made a little bit earlier, the more valuable you are to the practice, the less valuable the practice is. And so that's when you're going to get a lower multiple on your sale. Okay. And it means that if for whatever reason something happens to you and you need to sell the practice quickly, then, and that happens by the way, then you're going to get much less for the practice than if you had worked your way out of being key person dependence. Now, the other places that you see key person dependence is around an associate. as well as a practice manager. Oftentimes you see it in those two roles. It can occur in any role, of course, but the two other places you see it are around associates and around practice managers. So if you have an associate who's a gun, doing really, really well, they're productive, they're doing great, you want to lock them into the practice. Now, there's any number of ways that you can do that, and I'm not going to get into the tin tacks of that right here, right now, but you want to make sure that they are meeting all of their life objectives by being an associate dentist at your practice. So that may mean you need to think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I did a podcast on that a little while ago, thinking about, if money is taking care of the safety and psychological needs of the dentist, we need to think about the other things that we can provide. Maybe it's around culture and connection and relationships, or maybe it's around advancement and continued development. All those sorts of things create retention over and above money. Now, money is going to be important, and that will play a role in it for sure, but don't forget to look at the other things as well. Same with your practice manager. I've seen some circumstances where the practice manager's had all the passwords to everything, and the principal said, I need the password for such and such, and there's been a real struggle to get hold of it. And if that practice manager were to leave or to have an argument or to feel like they're just being malicious, then the whole practice can be held to ransom, and that's not great, obviously. So we want to make sure that we don't have key person risk. I even heard of a software company, believe it or not, where one developer had the password to the whole source code, and the business owner couldn't get access to it, which is crazy, right? Crazy. But again, that's perhaps not as relevant for dentistry with source codes, but it is just as relevant if you've got people holding key pieces of information and not sharing it. So really, really important. So when it comes to growing a valuable practice, as I said, whether you choose to sell your business now into the future or not at all, because a business that sells easily is, as I said, good to run, and then you still want to be maximizing the value of the asset that you're creating, right? And to do that, we want to have that reliable, repeatable, sustainable source of income that grows stably over time. And we want to look for the growth opportunities with the multiple. And equally with the multiple, we want to look at mitigating risk. We want to identify, quantify, and then mitigate the risk around that. So again, coming back to value, very, very important. You may not want to sell your practice. So before I see hands thrown up in air, people tuning out going, Jesse, this doesn't relate to me. Every single practice, I believe, should be built to sell. Now, every one of us is going to exit our practice one day, whether that's by choice or by circumstance. And I want to make sure that whatever the situation is for you, that you get rewarded as handsomely as possible for the effort, energy, and time you've put into growing this asset. So I hope you find that conversation helpful. Go out and build a valuable practice. It will be like you're the cow. You get to take the income as you go, create the wealth on the way, so you're not relying on the sale. But when you do get the sale, we want it to be a really pleasant looking check that you get and that someone writes you when they buy your practice. So I hope you find that helpful, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode. Bye now.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.